Welcome to Perspectives, a Canadian journal of political economy and social democracy. My name is Clement Nokos, editor of Perspectives Journal and director of policy and engagement at the Broadbent Institute. The 2024 Progress Summit, held in April, honored the legacy of the Institute's founder, Ed Broadbent, themed Making the Good Society, which comes from Ed's own doctoral dissertation entitled The Good Society of John Stuart Mill. In his dissertation, Ed concluded that it is clear in principle that only a collectively owned economy can avoid exploitation and thus make the good society realizable. It remains to be seen whether a nation, while rejecting Mill's normative economics, can retain his other social values and so make the cooperative individualist life a reality. In today's apparently well-performing capitalist economy, working class, ordinary Canadians aren't feeling like they live in a good society and acutely feel economic pressures. Price inflation, lagging productivity, and record profits, these are the economic indicators that policymakers use to say that the economy is doing great or not, and which ordinary Canadians, though, feel as an affordability crisis. But what does this all mean, and what's behind it? To help us break down some of these questions, I spoke with Broadbent Institute Policy Fellow and economist for the Canadian Union of Public Employees, Angela McEwen, at the 2024 Progress Summit. Angela, welcome to the Perspectives Journal podcast.
Thank you for having me, Clem. It's really nice to be here chatting with you.
And so, okay, food prices, housing prices, gas prices, everything's going up, it seems, everywhere in Canada. But what's really behind this inflationary episode, in your opinion?
Well, there were a few things at the beginning that were behind the, there were like a few dynamics that we saw happening. We saw very real problems in supply chains at the beginning of the pandemic that created ripple effects throughout the economy and caused prices to increase. We've seen wars, Russia and Ukraine, in the Middle East, that's affected the prices of fossil fuels. And we've seen really unpredictable climate affect agriculture. The crops have been, you know, not great or destroyed. And so there's been shortages there as well. But when you get past that initial problem that we had in the economy, what we saw happen was across the board in several industries, corporations started raising prices faster than they had to. In Canada, there have been several studies. Jim Stanford in the Center for Future Work has looked at this. David McDonald at the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives. And they looked at where did prices grow the fastest and where did profit margins grow the fastest. And so we saw it in car dealerships. We saw it in oil refineries.
You see it every day at Wawa's.
You see it every day in grocery stores. Gas prices and grocery store prices are the things that people noticed first. So all along that supply chain for food, we saw just every month it was getting more and more expensive, right? Every time you go into the grocery store and you want to buy, you know, healthy food for your family to eat, you want to buy some vegetables or you want to buy some chicken or whatever it is, it was more expensive. And I remember, you know, going to grab a head of broccoli and just kind of choking at what the price was, or some like berries for a treat for dessert. And it really got pretty extreme. And nobody was paying attention to it because they were at that point in time obsessing about the possibility of a wage price spiral. So all of the messaging from the Bank of Canada was we have to prevent workers from expecting inflation to go up because then they'll just ask for more money and they'll cause more inflation. So there was this whole narrative at the time that governments should make sure they weren't spending too much money because that would add to inflation. Workers should make sure that they weren't asking for any raises because that would cause inflation. And there was this idea that because there's competition in the market, that there would be no excessive price increases on the corporate side. But what we saw was the opposite of that. Workers were not getting raises. There's a number of reasons why a wage price spiral probably wouldn't have happened anyway. It shouldn't have been anyone's concern if they were looking at the data and the structure of the economy. But we had a pretty concerted effort from, you know, the Canadian Labour Congress and other labor groups to bring this data to the attention of policymakers. And finally, we did get some mentions of it from the Bank of Canada. We have gotten some discussions about it in Parliament, and there's still discussions about how do we prevent this type of price gouging in. And again, I think grocery stores are the big one because, you know, we all need food to live. And but the other one that isn't really getting talked about as much is price gouging in the rental market. There were places where, you know, apartment rents were going up by huge percentages, and people were getting priced out of somewhere to live. So these are two things that we need for survival: shelter, food, going up consistently and faster than overall inflation.
Now, sticking on that issue of prices, you know, there have been some economists such as Isabella Weber, who is our 2024 Ellen Mason's Wood lecturer this May 30th at Toronto Metropolitan University. Check it out if you can make it. But she gained a lot of traction around the world for her proposal that price controls are really the policy choice that's needed to tackle this inflationary period. You know, some might argue that price controls go against the laws of economics, that this causes a lot of problems, you know, sometimes it's deadweight loss, but price controls are back in vogue. What do you make of price controls then in the Canadian context to take care of things like the price of housing or the price of food?
Yeah, I think probably we've had more experience with price controls in housing. Rent controls have been a thing at some point in time, I think in almost every province, and they can work very well, because the assumption that there's a deadweight loss is based on a flawed understanding of how economics works, right? It's this technical understanding that was the same understanding the Bank of Canada was using, the same understanding the advisors to the Liberal Party were using, that the market is efficient, that the market will set the price at the clearing rate, and that they won't be able to extract rents from the economy, that they won't be able to set those prices higher than that because there's competition in the market. And so people would always be able to go somewhere else. But that ignores how power works in our relationships. That ignores the reality that we saw of grocery stores. There's three or four big chains, and they didn't necessarily collude in any specific way. They just saw they were all doing it, and they're like, oh, it's okay, we can all do this. we seem to be getting away with it. People need food, so they can't quickly find an alternate source of food so that they can discipline the corporations for setting prices too high, right? You need to eat, so you're buying food.
Everybody needs to eat.
Yeah. Everybody needs to eat. So we don't have a tool as consumers to punish Loblaws for setting their prices too high that would give them the message that they need to stop doing it, right? Like, we don't have that tool.
Like, we don't even have, you know, to think of it, there isn't really much of a consumer price indicator for Loblaws to really respond to.
No, and it's not just Loblaws, because it's food manufacturers as well, right? So it's all along the chain. People were setting those prices higher, except for maybe like some small suppliers that then were squeezed and were trying to get stuck between their rising costs and Loblaws saying, well, you know, we're the biggest grocery store. You have to sell us this for whatever price we tell you. You have to sell it to us for. So there's this dynamic where, yeah, there isn't like a universally understood what's a fair price for vegetables, what's a fair price for meat. And there's no kind of stick for us to enforce that. So it really does make sense that for necessities, that there be some kind of price control. The other thing that might be easier to implement that we talked about a lot is having an excess profits tax, because that does send a signal to businesses that this behavior is unacceptable, and it's a bit, it doesn't have to be as fine-tuned, and it might be easier to enforce than setting a price on carrots.
Over all of these price increase, over the price of carrots, you know, the Bank of Canada is paying attention, and just today, being April 10th, the Bank of Canada decided to hold interest rates at 5%, not seeing a need to give relief to people or to put more burden, just to stay the course. But, you know, in all of the other warning flags that it does raise, there is this feeling that economic productivity in Canada is lagging. And, you know, some point to the increased spending of the government behind it. Some would say that we have full employment and this is sort of the issue there. At the same time, you know, people feel an acute affordability crisis where the wages that they have aren't keeping up with, you know, the rising price of carrots. And so there's also this thing behind maybe productivity. With the lag in productivity, there's also this lag in wages. What do you think really is behind this indicator that there's lag in productivity, and in the meanwhile, ordinary Canadians are feeling the crunch of the affordability crisis?
Yeah, so productivity sounds like it's a really sophisticated concept, but it's not. It's just, you know, the value that the economy produces and that the economy puts a money value on per each hour of paid work. And so the value of our whole economy is so much more complex than that. And the reality of people's lived experiences is so much more complex than that. So when we're looking at corporations are increasing prices, where is that money flowing to? That money is flowing to profits. Where do those profits go? They go into, you know, executives' pockets. They go into very wealthy shareholders' pockets. They're flowing out of the economy. They're being sucked up. Armin Yalnızen has a really great thing that she likes to say all the time, that trickle down would work if it weren't for the sponges at the top. Right? And neoliberal economics behaves as if its theory of how the economy works ignores those sponges. But like the money is getting sucked up by those sponges. That's why carrots cost more, but nobody's getting paid more in order to sell them or grow them or any of that. And so that's kind of the missing piece. And when that money is getting sucked up, when they're extracting, there's Adam Smith had this theory of what was kind of useful investment in the economy that would help the economy grow long term, and what was really kind of a deadweight loss for the economy, what was a drag on the economy. And any activity where you're extracting rents is a drag on the economy. And what we have in Canada is a lot of actors who have a lot of money and who are extracting rents. They have these dominant positions in the economy and they're able to set the price. They're able to extract more money out of the economy than they really should be if everything was operating fairly. And so that actually leads to us having a less productive economy over time because they're not making the investments in creating an industry. They're not building equipment. They're not investing in training for workers. They're focusing very narrowly on the micro-credential that that worker needs to do this particular job. They're focusing very narrowly on how to squeeze more out of what they've already invested. And so this strategy, I think, is the natural outcome of the policy theories of neoliberal economics. When you cut taxes for corporations, when you deregulate, when you have austerity in terms of workers. Claire Mathai has three types of austerity that she talks about in her book, Financial, Monetary, and Industrial. When you have all three of those types of austerity operating at a level, it really damages the economy. It really damages our potential for growth. And so what we have is the sponges at the top are sucking things out, which is preventing us from growing. And that whole pie idea that we need to grow the economy doesn't make sense if a few people are taking it all and leaving crumbs for everybody else to share. So even if the economy were growing, even if productivity were growing, it's not being shared equally still.
And just to wrap up, I mean, these sponges at the top, how do we best squeeze those sponges in order to ensure that, you know, gains in productivity actually matter to ordinary Canadians?
Right. So the theory of the economy that I like is a cake. And the bottom layer of the cake is the environment, nature. Then on top of that, we have maybe household production. So you're taking care of your kids and your parents and stuff. A lot of unpaid work. Yeah. Then on top of that, we have public sector infrastructure and services. And then at the very, very top, it's just the like icing on the cake, is this private sector. We focus a lot of our policies on what we've been told would be best for the private sector, and we've ignored investment in all of the underlying structures there, right? So nobody has any time anymore to volunteer in their community to take care of the people that they love. And you're not making enough money to pay someone else to do it. We're not investing in actually thinking about what are the functions of our society that shouldn't be in the market. What are the functions of our society that it doesn't make sense for them to operate according to profit, where the profit motive will skew how this happens and will result in a squishing and a not having of that bottom foundation of the economy, right? So we see it all over the place. We see private sector investment in long-term care homes and it goes terribly. We see private sector investment in buses. And so if we're thinking about public transit as a way to make money, like that's just so at odds with the function that it would serve in our economy and society. We never take into account the value that provides, the cost of not doing it. And so the way we make decisions about how we are structuring our economy and what parts should be decommodified, should be taken out of the market, would function best in a different type of ownership structure. I think it's really important for us to start thinking about that and to start challenging this idea that everything in the market operates at like peak efficiency for all of our well-being, because it's just not true.
Angela, thank you for joining me on the Perspectives Journal podcast and here at the 2024 Progress Summit.
Thanks, Clem. I really enjoyed talking about the economy with you.
That was Angela McEwen, broadband policy fellow and economist at the Canadian Union of Public Employees at the 2024 Progress Summit. For those of you following the Broadband Institute and Perspectives Journal, we just announced the 2024 Ellen Mixon's Wood Lecturer, economist Isabella Weber, who was just mentioned during this conversation. She'll be speaking at Toronto Metropolitan University on Thursday, May 30th. This event, hosted by the Broadbent Institute, recognizes the legacy and scholarship of Marxist thought by historian Ellen Mixon's Wood, with a prize and lecture in her honor. Professor Weber's scholarship on price controls and profit-induced inflation that goes against the grain of mainstream capitalist economics is recognized as important research this year that equips the working class with policy alternatives against austerity and retrenchment in the present moment. Tickets for this event are now available. Please visit broadbentinstitute.ca for more information. And if you like this conversation, share and subscribe to Perspectives, a Canadian journal of political economy and social democracy on all major platforms, as well as Press Progress's Sources podcast that digs deeper into the news stories you won't find in the major papers. The Perspectives Journal podcast and Sources are proud members of the Harbinger Media Network, Canada's progressive podcast community. You can read more in Perspectives Journal, a publication of the Broadbent Institute, by visiting perspectivesjournal.ca.